So yes, it is Mother's Day. Let's have a Mother's Day sermon. We'll start out by looking at a list of nine qualities of a great mother. This is from parenting.com. Nine qualities of a great mother. A great mother is affectionate. Number two, caring. A great mother is not overbearing. Number four, I got a whoops on that one. number four is fun. Number five, rule setter. Number six, good listener. Number seven, a great mom is relatable. Number eight, role model. And number nine, accepting. So this is nine qualities of a great mom according to parenthood.com, parenting.com. All right, let's look a little closer at these things. Back to number one on the list there. A great mom is affectionate, so loving, tender, warm, soft-hearted, devoted, pretty similar to the number two one on that list, right? Caring. So this feeling that emanates from a mother of warmth and love and concern for their child. You know, women have tend to have an ability to do this and to empathize in ways that I think us men have a hard time with. Sometimes. I tell you what, if I was sick and I had the option of being cared for by my wife Anna or by a duplicate of me, if that was possible, I could tell you who I would choose. I would choose Anna. She's so much better than I am at feeling bad for someone who's feeling bad and for trying to help. So in general, it just seems like women are more wired this way. Now, that's not always true, of course. I'm sure there are some women who just feel like affection is not their strong suit, and there's probably some men that are better than others at this, but I think in general it seems like women are better at it. I went to the doctor's office not too long ago, and I was feeling sick, and I kind of explained what was going on with me to the nurse, and she gave me one of those aw noises, and you know, the look in her face, I could tell that she really cared, and I just felt empathized with. She cared, even though she talks to people all day long. She really cared about what was going on with me. Now this did not happen, but I can imagine that if I had explained my symptoms to Harlow in one of our meetings, that Harlow would have said to me, "Huh, that's too bad. Here, have another donut." Right? Right, okay. Not quite the same level of empathy, but that's okay, because that's what I would have said to him if he was telling me about his illnesses. So, you know, growing up, didn't you want your mom to be with you when you were sick? You know, I mean, dad could have made me an omelet. That was like the one thing he knew how to do in the kitchen. But man, mom, she knows all the medications to give you and what foods might settle your stomach and how to maybe distract you in a good way from feeling bad. So I think when you're sick, you want your mom. A good mom is affectionate and caring. Number three on that list is not overbearing. So a definition of overbearing is a person who arrogantly asserts their will over another person. That would be a definition. You could think probably of a military dictator. Oh man, nobody wants a mom to be a military dictator in their home. Someone who's just weighing in on every single aspect of that child's life. Of course, there needs to be guidance, right? We need to have guidance. But I think a good mom knows when it's time to step back a little bit and let the child be a child and be free to explore and make their own mistakes from time to time. So I think a good mom knows when it's time to back off and let that child establish their own path in life. Number four on the list is fun. When my brother and I, who are closest in age, when we were in elementary school, we used to take long driving trips on occasion with the family, usually out to Colorado to visit my dad's relatives. And mom always came prepared for these trips. She would have these bags full of fun things for us to do in the car, and we could get one new thing at the top of each hour. So this would be things like Mad Libs. Do they still do Mad Libs? Yeah, I remember. I love those filling those things out. Or maybe it's one of those little books that you had a pen with invisible ink, and you could uncover secret messages, or it would have, you know, you needed the pen to do some game in the book. Sometimes it would be a candy bar or a treat. And so, you know, my brother and I got pretty jazzed about this, and we were watching our clocks and make, you know, when was the new hour coming so that we could pull another surprise out of the bag. Win-win for Mom, right? I mean, she comes off as fun, and she keeps us busy and out of her hair, right? So pretty smart. Number five on the list is rule setter. This is kind of interesting. I think normally we think of maybe Dad being the rule setter and the authority, but I'm not so sure that's true. For the most part, Anna and I agree how to raise Maya. We don't have too many arguments about that. And of course, we've got it fairly easy with Maya being at the ripe old age of two. I understand that these things will get more challenging in time. Right now, it's basically about, you know, you have to listen when we tell you to do something. We're working on that one, right? But especially if it's something like crossing the street by herself or that kind of thing. And, you know, currently we're trying to get her to say, more pasta, please, Daddy, other than what it is currently, which is, need pasta! So, another one we're working on. But every once in a while, a situation will come up where maybe Anna might be a little more stern than I am, or making a bigger deal out of something than I think it should be treated. And sometimes if I object, she'll say, you know, listen, buddy, I'm the one who's home with this girl all day long, and I'm not having that behavior in this house. And so I back off. She's right. She's the one there all the time. She really is the main, you know, as a stay-at-home mom especially, she's the main rule setter and main teacher for Maya. It kind of worked in the opposite direction the other day. I've been trying to teach Maya that it's okay to pick dandelions, but no other flowers. Because, you know, I don't want her going into somebody's garden and starting to pick flowers. Well, there's a bunch of little purple flowers down by our driveway in one portion of our overgrown landscaping. And we don't really care too much about those purple flowers. But Anna had told me that she was allowing Maya to pick those, and you know, I started to complain. But again, she said, you don't understand. She says, I'm sick all the time right now, because she's pregnant, if you don't know. I'm sick all the time, and Maya will sit at that little thing of flowers, and she'll pick them, and she'll just do that for like 20 minutes, and I can just sit here. She goes, she's going to pick those flowers. So again, I back off. I back off. So in our house anyway, for Maya, mom is the main rule setter, and that's a good thing. Number six is good listener. Man, my parents were really good at this. I don't know about yours. Now, of course, as you grow into adulthood, you don't always want your parents giving you their opinions on every aspect of your life. But if I or my brothers had an issue that we wanted some advice on, boy, my folks were great to go to, and they were great listeners, and they always had a wise advice for us, and still that way with my mom, of course, so good listener. Number seven is relatable. Oh, this is a tricky one. Anna and I have talked about this. We both want to be relatable for our kids. We want our kids to know that we understand the situations that come up in life, the temptations, the crazy stuff that can happen from time to time, what it's like to be in love with someone when you're a teenager, and what it's like to want to be cool and the social pressures that come with school-age life. So we want to be approachable. We want our kids to know that they can come and talk to us, and we'll try to keep a sense of humor about things. Maybe we'll try not to freak out too quickly. But at the same time, we want to guide our kids on a godly path, right? We don't want to just laugh about sin. So we are the rule setters and rule enforcers, and that makes it a little tricky to also be relatable. Our kids need us to be the rule enforcers, and they need us to be relatable. So may God give us all wisdom in this. That is not an easy task. But I think that we do want our moms to be relatable. Number eight, a good mom is a strong role model, of course. And then number nine, you want your mom to accept you. And that's just about feeling the love, right? And you want to be who you are, and you want your mom to love you. So that's our list of good mom qualities. I want to show you something interesting about this list. Take a look at Luke chapter 13 with me. Jesus said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who killed the prophets and stoned those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather you, to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing." Tough subject there, but Jesus paints a picture of God here as being affectionate, doesn't he? He wants to take the Israelites and protect them like a mother hen would under her wings. Affection and caring in that verse. Isaiah 49:15 says, "Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will never forget you." This is a God of compassion and of affection. This is a motherly emotion coming from God for human beings in that passage. God compares himself to a nurturing, loving mother. And of course, we know there are many, many passages in the Bible about how much God loves each human being. And love would be the heart of affection, of course. So God is affectionate and God is caring. Is God overbearing? No, I don't think so. The Bible makes it really clear who the boss is, right? He is the boss. He is the ultimate authority. But is he overbearing? No. There is much freedom that is given to us. God will call and call us to the truth. He will put a light onto the path for us, but he will not force us to walk it. He is anything but overbearing. Fun. Is God fun? Well, now there's no verses about Jesus cracking jokes. That's true. But there are plenty of Bible verses about telling us to have joy and to celebrate. I'm going to show you a picture now that my family has kind of grabbed onto over the years, and I love this. I actually have a copy of it in my office. So Jesus laughing. I love that picture. There are plenty of things in life to take seriously, and plenty of things in our walk with God to take seriously, and we need to do that. Many of those things are very worthy of serious attention. But you know what? This is the God who created laughter and joy. And I'm absolutely positive that he desires for us to enjoy the things, the good things that he gave to us in life, and that we're supposed to laugh and we're supposed to celebrate. The ability to think up creative ways of having wholesome fun, that comes from God. I totally believe that. So we don't have to apologize for seeking to have fun in life. It needs to be kept in balance with these other things, these important things that need to be taken seriously. And it should never trip over into sin, of course. But I believe that we should have fun in life and that Christians should bring the party. Is God a rule setter? And we know the answer to that one. But look at this image of God as rule setter from Matthew 11. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." We looked at this one earlier today. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Now, sin is a serious business. Make no mistake about that. It's a matter of life and death. But Jesus explains here that he's not a tyrant, is he? He's going to set the rules. He's going to lead you on the correct path, but his yoke is easy. His burden is light. He's gentle and humble. This is a good God we're talking about. This is a good rule setter. And again, I think we get a feeling from this passage of God as a nurturing and caring God. Next one on the list was good listener. Is God a good listener? I don't know about you, but he's never interrupted me as I pour out my heart to him. And you know these verses too, Philippians 4:6. "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." And 1 Peter 5:7, "Cast your anxiety on him because he cares for you." Sounds to me like God's a good listener and that he wants you to bring your cares. And he wants you to talk to him. Next one on the list was relatable. Is God relatable? Oh boy, at first thought on this one, I thought, oh, here's the one that's not going to fit. I mean, we're talking about the God who created the stars and the sun and the moon and all of this, and that's a little hard to relate to. But then I realized God knew that we needed him to be relatable. So what did he give us? Jesus Christ. The image of the true God. If we want to understand God, Scripture says, look at Jesus. Talking about Jesus, the writer of Hebrews says, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses. We have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Okay, we cannot relate to the not sinning part, right? But we can take comfort in the fact that Jesus experienced temptation. He knows that it's tough to live life as a human being. And because we know this about him, the passage in Hebrews goes on to say this. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. We can approach God with confidence. He's accessible. He's relatable. He's been there. The past two Good Friday services that we've shared together, we spent a lot of time looking at how much Jesus suffered in his final days on this earth. And I've said to you before, how wise of God was this? You know, we may suffer greatly in this life, but we know that we will never go through anything as bad as what Jesus went through. So God is relatable. He understands, and we can go to him with our troubles. Is Jesus a good role model? Of course, we don't have to say much about that one, do we? And then the last one, accepting. Is God accepting? You know, I think he is, but I think we have to define it a little bit. Perhaps you'll remember this illustration I gave you not so long ago. God's standard for living is up here, and none of us can reach it on our own. We're all here, or we're here, or we're here. We can't reach it. But God comes to us where we are at, right? He accepts us where we are at, and he comes to us and communicates how much he loves us. And he tells us that we can be forgiven for our sins if we submit our lives to him and believe in him. And when that happens, when we do that, he takes us from down here, and spiritually speaking anyway, puts us up here, the place we could never reach. And spiritually, he's able to look at us as pure and as holy, even though in reality our thoughts and our actions are still down here. So in many ways, he's broken us free from that grid, and he's given us forgiveness and love. But after he does all that, after he gives us the freedom and the love, then he comes back to us and says, by the way, I really do want you to keep moving up this ladder, right? Because behaviors matter to God. Our behaviors, our thoughts matter. He is not an anything goes kind of God. I'm just going to love you no matter what. That is not the case. He hates sin, but he is loving, and he will meet us where we are at and offer grace to us. And then that way we can say that God is accepting. So how interesting. God is affectionate and caring and not overbearing. He is fun. He's a wise rule setter. God is a good listener. God is relatable and a fantastic role model, and he is accepting and loving. Sounds like God is a good mother. And you know, I don't say that. I don't mean any disrespect in that. Every once in a while, you'll hear people talking about God, and they'll use the word she. I think I've heard this in a few rock songs over the years. And frankly, I think that those people actually probably are being disrespectful. I think they're probably trying to do it for shock value, right? And that they don't really care about God, that's my guess. Or maybe you might hear someone talking about God as Mother Earth. Again, I don't think they're talking about the God of the Bible here. They're probably not even talking about a personal God. I think the idea is more like there's this great, God is nature, right? And there's this great spirit that's somehow connected to this image of Mother Earth. So in that sense, in their mind, they can use female imagery for God. Sometimes you hear those things, but I'm not talking about either of those things today. Look at Genesis chapter 1. It says, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. I read that as saying that both male and female are created in God's image. That both sexes reflect parts of who God is. There's no hierarchy reflected in that particular passage, is there? We are equally in God's image. So To say that God has all the qualities of a good mother is not only not disrespectful, I think it's scriptural. And next month, when Father's Day rolls around, we'll see that God has all the qualities of a great dad, too. We've been covering some religious philosophy in the young adults group lately, because you know we're all quite brilliant. Actually, I think all of us have had trouble pronouncing some of the words in the book that we're studying. But one of the thoughts that we've mentioned lately from that book that we're reading is that an effect cannot be greater than the cause. An effect cannot be greater than the cause. We are the effect, men and women. We are the creation. God is the cause. He is the creator. Therefore, there is nothing good in us that God doesn't have. The effect cannot be greater than the cause. So it appears that God took all of his wonderful qualities and he kind of divided them up among men and women. So I think that means that when we're sick and when you're really needing some caring and some affection, you can go to God because he has those qualities within himself. When you're in the mood for fun, I think it's good to include the Lord in it because he created fun. When you're troubled or you're not sure what to do about something, you can bring it to God because he's a good listener. God accepts you where you are at and he loves you, but he will also teach you the right way by being a wise rule setter for you. And if you need some direction on how to implement these things, just look at Jesus Christ. He is an amazing role model and he is relatable. He understands. He's been there. So God has all the qualities of a great mother. Well, it's not enough just to note all of this and say, oh, how interesting. We can't really stop there. Ephesians 5:1 says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. Okay, so God is this great role model for us. We are to follow in his footsteps. We're to seek to live like him. And that means that if God demonstrates all these qualities we've been looking at today, we're supposed to demonstrate those as well. And that's true whether or not you are a female. Guys, you can be affectionate. I didn't say effeminate. I said affectionate. You can be a man's man and still show a soft side. You can be warm with people and caring. You can demonstrate devotion and love. I think this is true for all of us. You know, Jesus behaved in those ways. He cried for Lazarus. He had compassion on the poor and the needy. He said, let the little children come to me. Now, you wouldn't question Jesus' manhood, would you? Be imitators of God. We should all work to show affection and love and not just to children. I think we should remember to not be overbearing in our interactions with people. God, in his wisdom, knows that there is a time to point to the rules, and there is a time to back off and let people make their choices. I think that's true for us as well. And you know what? There are consequences to those choices, and we dearly want to save our loved ones from suffering poor consequences. There's a time to assert the truth, but there is also a time to back off and let them do it. Let them do what they're going to do. I really don't think that being overbearing is going to yield any fruit. We need to be fun people, not gloomy Christians. We're supposed to bring the fun. We are living life to the full. Hey, we're getting it. Living life to the full. Usually we're concentrating on that the second half of that little phrase, but right now I'm concentrating on the first part. Living life to the full. We're supposed to have fun. Amen. Let's be fun people. We need to be good rule setters for our children, of course. Now, when it comes to talking about relations with people who are not our children, who we're not in authority over, I think maybe you say this one, that we need to be good rule supporters, good rule communicators. We just said it. There is a time in life when we are to point to the truth. We are to stand up for God's truth and his rules in this world. But we need to do it as God does in love. We need to push ourselves to be good listeners. You know, let me suggest something to all of us today. Pay attention to your conversations with people. And when you're done, think back over the conversation and ask yourself, what percentage of the time did I talk? And what percentage of the time did they talk? Is it about even? Are you a good listener? Or are you a good talker? Now, I understand. Maybe that person is just real quiet and you had to fill in the gaps, right? That could be. That could be. But I think even on that one, we ought to check ourselves a little bit. Did I ask questions about that person's life? Did I give them an opportunity to talk about themselves? Remember James 1:19. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. We're to be good listeners. We should work at being relatable to people. I think we want to position ourselves as someone who tries to understand, someone who will be slow to freak out. Are you a person that people feel safe talking to? Do they know that you will love and accept them? And again, I'm not talking about anything goes. Our behaviors matter. There are consequences. There is a time to speak the truth in love. But does that person know that you're going to be committed to loving them even if they do sin? Finally, are you a good role model for everyone who interacts with you in life? We're to do that. We're to live as disciples of Jesus Christ, and he, of course, was the best role model. Well, this is what we do on Sunday mornings, isn't it? Sunday morning sermons are largely about character development. And we look at who God is, we learn what he is asking from us and how he wants us to live, we seek to become more like him. We are all people in process. This is not the first time, nor will it be the last time, that we're going to have a list of characteristics of Christ followers to look at and reflect on the board. Now, this particular list, it started out as a list of 9 qualities of a great mother, but then we discovered that God also demonstrates these characteristics. And because of that, then, that becomes a list that we want to pay attention to for our own lives as we seek to imitate him. That's all of us, whether you are male or female, whether you are mother or father, or whether you have no children. We should all demonstrate these qualities, not just with kids, but with each person we come into contact with. So look at the list. Mothers, are you doing these things for your children? Everybody, do these characteristics describe you and how you relate to people in your life, how you relate to children, how you relate to your family, to your coworkers, to your friends? Now, there's 9 points there. Anytime you deliver a 9-point sermon, you don't expect everybody to remember all 9 points, all right? But is there one thing on that list that you need to work on? Might I suggest that you look at where you're the weakest there, and maybe over the next couple weeks in your quiet times with the Lord, you ask the Lord about that particular quality and characteristic, and you ask him to help you develop that in greater measure, and he will help you, because after all of these characteristics came from him in the first place. May God make us like him for our good, for the good of all that we come into contact with, and for his glory. Amen.